Good afternoon. We now have a quorum. I'd like to welcome you to this afternoon's study session for the Mesa City Council. Vice Mayor Summers and Councilmember Higgins will not be joining us, and Councilmember Glover apparently is running a little bit late. First item on the agenda is to review the tonight's regular council meeting agenda. Page 2. Items 2 through 3D. Items 3E through 4B. Items 4C through 4E. Want them to say it?
I
have people standing by the
door. Mayor, Council, we'd like to give a brief presentation on item 4D.
4D.
Is that okay? We can do it now, or do you want to do it at the end of the review?
No, already said. We'll do it now. Okay, we're fine.
Gentlemen,
go for it.
Good evening, Mayor and Council.
What we wanted to do is give you a quick presentation on our patrol vehicle fleet and the direction that we want to take with purchasing vehicles this fiscal year. Currently, because the Ford Motor Company no longer makes the Crown Victoria, we've been looking at different vehicles for us to purchase. One of the issues we have is a lot of the patrol vehicles that are cars that are out there now are smaller than the Crown Victoria. So we have problems with space as far as the prisoner in the back seat and also for the officer in the front seat. I don't know how many of you got a chance to look at the Caprice that was out there, but even the new Caprice, we have to put lap belt extenders in there for the seat belts for the officers because it's difficult with all the web gear and everything on to try to get to the seat belt. Plus, we have issues with where the control is for driving the vehicle and the position of the laptop, and when the laptop's up, you have some visibility issues. So taking all of that into consideration, we're looking at purchasing some SUVs. So we looked at the Tahoe, and if you can look at the board there, the difference in cost between the Tahoe and the Caprice is about $1,820. So it's not a huge initial cost layout for that. And then you also get a return when you sell the vehicle back. We're estimating we're probably going to get some of that money back because they'll have a higher resale value than the Caprice does. We would like to go to a mixed fleet where we have both patrol vehicles and SUVs. And if looking at our next table kind of gives you a rundown of kind of where we are and the vehicles that we'd like to purchase this fiscal year. Currently, we're at about 91% with the Crown Victoria, with about 5% of the Tahoe since we only have 11 Tahoes. Our goal for this fiscal year is to purchase 56 Tahoes, 7 Caprices, and we also want to buy 5 Explorers. And the reason for the Explorers is to look at an alternative to the Tahoe. It's a little bit larger than the Caprice and see how that works. We've tried one of the Explorers out now, but the problem we have is we don't have one that has been outfitted with the cage. So we haven't seen how that's going to work for patrol for the patrol officer. So we want to buy some now and kind of test those out. Are there any questions?
Yes, sir.
Why does the radio cost $400 more in the Caprice or the Tahoe?
Because of the radio that's in the actual Caprice, part of it has to be installed in the trunk because of the space usage. So that's why the radio is more expensive. There isn't enough room to put the same size radio that we have in the Tahoe that you can put in the Caprice. So there's two different components separated out, and it's more expensive.
Okay. And what's the AEP stand for?
Arizona Emergency Products. It's a subcontractor to the city.
Okay. So that's the light package,
Correct.
The cage, all that kind of stuff?
Correct.
Thanks.
The question I have is, going back to the next slide, if the Caprice is, you gave a laundry list of reasons why not to get the Caprice, why would we buy any more of those?
Because depending on the officer, some of the officers who are shorter can fit into the Caprice, and they have a little bit more room in there for them to use them. Not everybody likes the Tahoe. And the Caprice is the closest thing we have right now to a Crown Victoria that we have. That's a car. So we're trying to find something else that will replace the car. We're hoping to come out with something different. They just don't have one yet that's, you know, like the Crown Vic. I mean, if there was more Crown Victorias, we'd buy some more of those. We just don't have those to purchase.
Mr. Brady's looking at me like, Mayor, you would have been in a, you'll be in a Tahoe. I think it was because of the height, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the height. Councilmember Fenter.
Having just bought a Tahoe for my family, and we've owned one for years, my daughter now has the old one. You know, I'm a believer in the, you know, safety and maneuverability. So why would we buy five Explorers just to test them? I mean, that's a huge amount of money for a test. Is there a different way to do that without buying them? Or, you know, it just seems like a lot of money to do a test to see which ones we like.
Well, we had the Explorer here from Birch Ford. We tested it out for a few weeks. And we had some of the officers drive it. We just don't have one that was outfitted with the cage. So the chief had agreed with the, in talking to some of the union members, that we'd buy five of the Explorers and then test those out to see if that's something we would like to go to that would be an alternative to the Caprice.
How
I mean, we could bring that down and just purchase two of them and try, say, two. Because my only issue with like getting one is there's a lot of different people have different opinions of it. So I like to have a couple to test out, like probably one on the east side and then one on the west side to see if they like the vehicle, just because you do a lot more driving on the east side than you do on the west side. So you have different driving conditions.
So maybe we should just cut that down, Councilman?
Well, yeah, it's not like a big deal to me, but, you know, for a test run, you know, that's a lot. What is that, $200,000-$300,000 probably, right?
Mayor, Councilman Member Fenter, if you look at the total amount of vehicles that are being replaced, this was a part of that total. So we're not buying five additional vehicles. We're simply converting five of the vehicles that would be replaced to be the Ford product instead of the GM product. Okay, so we would still be making a purchase, but it just simply wouldn't be Ford. It would be General Motors.
Yeah. Councilman Richens?
What's the anticipated difference in fuel costs between the Caprice and the Tahoe?
I can answer that, Councilmember Richens. The fuel consumption between the Tahoe and the Caprice are virtually identical right now. We've got 10 Caprices in the field right now. We've got 11 Tahoes in the field, and taken from the 2012 fleet reports, we took all the vehicles, took all of the mileage and the fuel consumption, and came out with very, very close. 9.1 mpg on the Caprice and 9.0 on the Tahoe. Very, very close.
That's because the Caprice has a larger engine than the Tahoe. Mm-hmm.
Alex?
Just to follow up, so I bought my Tahoe in 2012. I paid $38,000 for it, I think. My memory slips me quite a bit. So these upfitted, is that the additional cost up to the $50,000 that we're talking about? Or
that's correct. If you're looking at the $50,000 figure, you're looking at the total upfit cost.
Total upfit. Okay.
As a
see,
patrol
you,
vehicle.
You didn't have all the lights they have. They're getting XM radio, you didn't. I think that's different than the radio cost, right?
Pretty basic on
that's
ours.
Not the radio we're talking about.
Okay, any other questions?
So, Mayor and Council, we wanted to have a conversation today, since we're seeing just a very few that are coming through today, and then you'll be seeing more of these coming through during the remainder of the year. And we're working diligently to communicate with our local dealers also about this plan that we're moving forward with. So they have the timing and the numbers that we're looking to purchase, so that they will have that information when we go out for bid, so they can participate.
Right. The balance of these will all be bid locally. It's just these units right now are going off state contract.
And I think just the big announcement is that you'll see a lot more SUVs as regular patrol cars than we see now. Now they're basically, you see them as canine and other types of units mostly, right? Specialty units, I would say.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, whereas now you're going to see, people are going to start seeing a lot more of the Tahoes out there on regular patrol. So that's the big change, I guess,
that's correct.
Yeah, Councilman Pender?
And just, you know, the officer safety portion of it, I know we just recently had a wreck, and I'm glad to hear that officer's doing better, but as I understand a little bit of information with the impact and the equipment, and you know, there's a lot of concern in the smaller units, and you know, keeping this officer safe, and if they do unfortunately have an accident, that they have some room to survive in. And so that's why we bought it for family and going that route. So I definitely get the thought process, and it doesn't look like a lot of difference in money, so I'm a big supporter there.
Thank you. Anyway.
Thank you very much.
Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, items 5A through 6A. And
Mayor, we also have a brief presentation. Catherine, on 5D.
5B.
D. D is in dog.
D is in Delta.
Delta.
Let's get our...
Excuse me. Those of us on the ground use dog.
Alpha,
you guys Alpha, are up in the air use
Delta.
Delta.
Echo. Foxtrot.
Oh, sorry. I just pulled up the Tahoe presentation again. Good
You're
evening.
You're buying Tahoes too?
No. No, we're not. I don't know. Can I? Good evening, Mayor, Council Members, Chris. Hopefully this looks familiar to you. We actually approved the White Mountain Apache Tribe settlement back in 2009, but we need to bring it forward again because these settlements generally go through a federal process, and as they go through a federal process, certain things change, and then all the settling parties kind of have to come back together and kind of re-agree, and then it moves forward through the court adjudication process. Before I start, though, with me tonight is Colette Moore. I think all of you guys know Colette Moore. She is our water resources advisor in our department, and she has been handling the negotiations for about 3 years now. Is that right? So the White Mountain Apache Tribe has about 12,000 tribal members. The reservation boundaries were established in 1879. It encompasses a very large number of acres. And what's important for us is that their reservation really basically overlies the watershed for the Salt River almost in its entirety. So a settlement with the Apaches is very important to us. So basic settlement terms, the tribe is going to have rights to about 52,000 acre feet of water per year. It's actually a little bit more than that, but then we kind of give them credit for return flows back into the river. A large portion of that is actually Central Arizona Project water that will then be leased back to various cities, including Mesa. Most of that water is non-Indian agricultural priority water. Some of it will be firmed, which means that it will have a priority equal to the municipal and industrial priority in the Central Arizona Project Canal, which means it's just higher priority water and less subject to drought. Some of the benefits to us, you guys know this, but one of the main benefits of a water right settlement is certainty. It lays out who gets what water, and based on that certainty, we can then move forward with long-term plans. And in water resources, we don't build anything quickly or, frankly, inexpensively. So it's really important to kind of know what we have and what we're working with. Also, the tribe will waive various claims. Basically, you kind of agree to stop suing each other about water rights. We will be leasing water from the White Mountain community, about 866 acre feet per year of high priority CAP water, and then about 2,300 acre feet per year of lower priority CAP water. There are no capital charges associated with this water when it comes through, but we do have to pay full O&M and energy prices on it. And we also have to pay about $7.4 million to acquire this water, but we acquire it, that $7.4 million is for the entire 100-year lease term, if that makes sense. So it's like an acquisition fee up front.
We had included that in our last
CIP
water bond program.
Yes, it was in. It's
an upfront payment,
right?
It's an upfront payment.
Exactly, and it was. And Chris is correct. It was in our CIP and our last bond authorization.
It's an upfront payment to buy the right to lease.
It covers the lease,
or does it cover
the lease
cost
for 100?
It is. It's an upfront acquisition cost for to lease the water for 100 years, and then every year we have to pay the fixed O&M and energy charges back to the Central Arizona Project.
Okay. Now, so you clarify the difference between the fixed O&M and the energy from the lease cost.
Right. So the lease cost is just the upfront cost of $7.4 million, and then the fixed O&M is the fixed operation and maintenance cost of running the CAP canal.
So that's the amount we pay to CAP.
That's the amount we pay to CAP, as is the energy cost to pump it uphill.
Okay.
Did I get that right? Does that make sense? I know I have it right. I'm sorry. Let me say that again. Did I make sense? Did I make sense when I explained that?
Yeah, after I had you clarify it, sure.
Sorry about that.
So when we take delivery of the water, we're paying those fees. Is that?
That's correct.
And we just like to give you a hard time, Catherine.
Thank you, Mayor.
I keep speaking out of turn. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
My apologies. Can you please also explain the difference between high priority and low priority cap?
Right.
And then I have a follow-up after that.
Okay. So Central Arizona Project Water is the lowest second lowest priority water on the Colorado River. So
When you say lowest priority among all of the other states that claim water rights.
So in times of drought, it will be the Central Arizona Project Water that gets cut first, before California's water gets cut, before Yuma's water gets cut, before Nevada's water gets cut. It has the lowest priority in the system. And within the Central Arizona Project, then, there are various legal flavors of water there as well. And excess water is one of them. That gets cut before the other form. So that's like the lowest priority CEP water. So when a drought comes, excess water gets cut first. And then non-Indian agricultural water gets cut second.
And excess water means water that's not currently allocated in the $4.2 million.
Exactly. Excess water is water that's just, it's on a year-to-year contract.
And the reason we have excess,
it's an odd name. It sounds like it's unused. It is used.
Well, it actually is unused. It's unallocated.
It's unallocated.
It's unused, and so you have people come in and buy it on the spot market and use it. So because we use it all, so we don't lose it all.
Exactly.
But it's not permanently allocated.
It's not permanently allocated, and it's currently used by, like, the Water Banking Authority, the Central
right.
Arizona Groundwater Replenishment District, and others who just want to recharge some water for the future.
Right.
So that gets cut first in a drought, and then non-Indian agricultural water gets cut next, and then municipal and industrial and Indian priority water get cut third. Municipal and industrial and Indian priority water all share the same priority level. What we're leasing is essentially 866 acre-feet of M&I priority water, and then about 2,400 acre-feet of non-Indian agricultural water.
So tier one and two water?
Yes.
The highest, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And so what happens in shortage? We've paid this money for the lease up front, and we get a shortage declaration, and we can't take delivery on that water. Are we just out?
We're just out. That's one of the risks of the lease. The $7.4 million buys you the right to lease the water for 100 years. There's no guarantee that you're going to get that water every year. You take your risk along with everyone else in the Central Arizona Project system.
Okay, thank you.
But, I'm sorry, Colette, why don't you elaborate on that?
The lower priority water has a lower charge for it. So each flavor of water, the 866, has a higher acre foot cost to it than the lower priority NIA water. So the total $7 million that Catherine is saying is the total cost, but it is broken out into the separate flavors of water.
And why is that important?
Because it has a lower priority, so we don't want to pay as much for it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Catherine, why don't you? By having, we're purchasing this because that it creates, allows us to have not just water, but it allows us to meet those obligations, making sure we have that assured water supply mm-hmm. for growth for the city in the future, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And yes, we do purchase the water so that we can continue to have a very strong assured water supply designation from the State Department of Water Resources. And it's that assured water supply designation that allows us to continue to subdivide land and grow into the future. Okay. Many of you already saw this. We're just going through and reapproving it. All the other parties will be reapproving it as well. And then it will go to the adjudication court. And then the whole thing kind of wraps up with ultimately a decision by the Secretary of the Interior, a record of decision. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Any other questions?
So if this has a record of decision issued on it, is it going through an environmental impact statement process right now then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So the EIS is based on the newly negotiated terms? And is it Bureau of Reclamation doing
right.
that?
Right. I'm sorry. There's already been environmental work, environmental impact statement work on the CAP itself, and the CAP water is still falls under that. We're not creating a new diversion.
Okay.
I'm sorry, though. I'm less clear about the White Mountain Apache Tribe will be making new diversions off of the Salt River, but I'm sorry, I'm less familiar with that process from the environmental perspective because they're not subject to the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. They go through a federal process for their environmental clearance, and I'm less familiar with that. And I do believe, though, that the Bureau of Reclamation is working with the Apache Tribe on their increased diversions from the Salt River, and they're also working together to create Minor Flat Dam, which will be a little bit south of Honda. So I presume it's going through an environmental process as we speak, but
well,
I don't know, maybe Colette knows more.
No, that is it, and we have this map. It's very small, I'm sorry, but it does show Minor Flat Reservoir. They're also building a pipeline to deliver that water from Minor Flat to some of their larger cities, including all the way out to Cibicue. So that's what the EIS and the ROD is for, is
okay.
The environmental clearance for that work.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, but I'm sorry, Council Member, it goes through a different process than we go through in the state, if that makes sense.
But I was just the flag, because the record of decision is a technical term for defining the conclusion of an environmental impact process.
Yes.
So that's why when I saw that up there, I was like, wait, how does that apply to us? So.
Yes, sorry.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Now everyone else behind you can wake up now from that discussion. I know that was enthralling. Anything else in items 5A through 6A? Items 7A, 7B. Okay. The next item is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the 2012 Bicycle Master Plan. And if we were properly set up, we'd have a little Queen playing in the background. No Queen fans out there. Okay, that's all right. Bicycle. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Everyone.
My bicycle.
Take that one. Good evening, Mayor and Council. On your formal agenda tonight is up for adoption the Bicycle Master Plan. I have with me tonight the two primary authors, Mark Venti. Mark's our senior transportation engineer, and Jim Hash is our planner, too. These folks did a great job on this plan. They had a lot of people to please, a lot of input from people that was incorporated into the master plan. This is a culmination of 3 years of work, and it was created internally by staff, city staff. Had we gone out for a consultant, it likely would have cost over $200,000. So a wonderful job was done by all. Our outreach effort was very well coordinated and was reviewed and edited based on comments from several groups. We had a citizen working group that met many times. We had a technical advisory group made up of city employees, and we had public outreach meetings in each council district. In addition, the plan was reviewed and recommended for council adoption by the city's Transportation Advisory Board and the Sustainability and Transportation Committee. If there are any questions of me, I'll have these two gentlemen sprint through our presentation.
Thanks, Dan.
We would have had you wade through the presentation, but we already talked about water. Get it? Forget it. Where's the snare drum when you need one?
I know.
Go ahead. Take your time. Don't feel rushed. We're fine.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. I think we've had really good timing with the timing of the bike plan. We're going to go through the document here very briefly, just hitting the main items. We start the plan with a vision statement, like most plans start. We feel the vision of the bike plan fits right with the vision that the city's evolving in right now, with the development of the downtown with light rail, with the colleges coming on board, with the Cubs Stadium, Fiesta District, and the general urbanization of the city. Right now is a perfect time to develop an idea and a vision for the mode of an alternative mode of transportation, such as the bike, for the city.
As we begin to move through the document and the introduction in chapter one, we move on into chapter two and the goals and objectives. This is a collaborative effort from citizens, public input, from working group discussions, as well as survey data that we took in during the process. These goals were identified and matched to the League of American Bicyclists bicycle-friendly community status 5E objectives that are based on and graded upon when a city is looking for bicycle-friendly status, as we are. Each goal established a program infrastructure, which is in coordination with the League of American Bicyclists curriculum, and ensures that Mesa moves forward through the bicycle-friendly community status and up to the platinum recognition that we ultimately are looking for. The goals were further defined from that point on through objectives, and then we're given performance measures which will ensure that they're reached throughout the duration of the plan. As you move along and into Chapter 3, we begin to break down each of the 5E's that established as guide by the American Bicyclist Association to help us progress as a bicycle-friendly community. While the city currently excels in the area of engineering with regards to the bicycle-friendly criteria, we felt that we needed to expand our areas in the other E's. As you can see on the slide in front of you, the three E's that we focused on through cooperation with the League of American Bicyclists are education. We have a strong child's education program, but we tend to lack in adult education at the current time in the city of Mesa. So we're going to build that system with the help of MAG and the regional system to make that more robust. We're also looking at encouragement, as we do every year with the Great Arizona Bicycle Festival that the city's transportation department hosts in cooperation with Dale Tour de Mesa. And we'll also work with the police department with re-education of the police officers, as well as moving forward with programs in the courts that will help to defer fines for folks who get bicycle-related citations. That will replace that with training that will help them become more bicycle-friendly or more bicycle-safe and move forward in that direction.
The next chapter, Chapter 4, talks about bike facilities. Bike facilities are pretty much the hardware, the infrastructure you see out there in the city. There's facilities we're familiar with and that we use, such as bike lanes, bike routes, shared use paths. But we also tried to talk about some more state-of-the-art, cutting-edge ideas that are being used around the country and around the world, such as you see our colored bike lanes, sharrows, different kinds of wayfinding, and we also introduced some different ideas on bike parking. The next two chapters 5 and 6, are what I think a lot of folks consider the meat and potatoes of a plan, in particular the bike plan here. And this is, I'm talking about the network needs. Jim is going to talk up to the program needs. But what these chapters help define is the system. Right now we have an existing system, and in Chapter 5 we took a look at that, took a look at all the existing bike lanes, bike routes, and shared use paths, and determined where there are gaps in that system. We used 5 different analysis means to find those gaps. One was a public working group we worked with. One was staff. One was a computer methodology called latent demand analysis. We also took in public comment, and we also looked at how the network would connect with the region. From those various layers, I guess you can say, we came up with a set of gaps. And those numbers of gaps gave us an idea of a higher degree or a lower degree of need. In Chapter 6, we then fine-tune that. Chapter 5 was pretty much purely math and numbers. Chapter 6, we went a little further with what we called implementation criteria, which was a set of qualitative scores, I guess you can say. And staff, we went through each segment. We applied this scoring. Then we took the implementation scores, added it to the needs results to give us the final priority of all the segments. We have roughly about 130 segments. And I want to add, if you looked at the plan, there's lots of maps in there. We couldn't have done this without our wonderful help from our GIS folks, particularly Corey Whitaker helped us quite a bit on all these maps. So we came up with a final 130 projects. To make it a little bit more manageable, looking at it over the next 5 to 10 years, we took off the top 40 of those projects, and that's what you see here. And then we broke them down even more into each of the six council districts. It ended up being roughly about 7 projects per district.
Councilor Cavanaugh.
Yeah, and not that I'm paranoid or anything, but both on my presentation and your presentation doesn't have District 3. Thinking you might be missing a map number 6-5, or I hope.
I see the same thing.
Oh,
apologize for that.
Yes.
Yes.
We are missing it in the slide.
There are projects.
All right, go.
I can be assured that there are some District 3 projects in the top 40 because I saw them on the list. But when I didn't see the map, I thought maybe it was just me.
So what I hear you saying is, if you weren't missing one before, you are now, right? Okay, good. Gotcha.
Oops.
Sorry for that oversight, large oversight. As we moved forward throughout the rest of Chapter 6, we moved on into the program development. And we looked at programs that would help to meet critical needs through the League of American Bicyclists that I keep mentioning, because that's our peer group, the one that we move forward and test ourselves against when and trying to elevate our bicycle-friendly status. When we brought programs forward, our recommendations for program expansion were to, again, like I said before, to increase the adult bicycle education where we have lacked in the past with strong child education. We need to bring those forward for adult education. We want to introduce a bicycle diversion program. Again, like I mentioned earlier, the alternative to fines for folks who receive citations for bicycle-related incidents. We want to revision our Safe Routes to School program, make it a more robust program in our schools, get that grassroots inertia into the bottom end of the, and get those children a good solid base on education for bicycling. And then we also want to move forward with a bicycle media campaign and tourism packet. As you know, driving through the city of Mesa on any given day, there's thousands of bicyclists out there. We recognize that we're a bicycle destination here in the United States. People want to come to the city of Mesa. They want to come to Arizona for the views and the bicycle riding. So we need to move forward and promote that so folks come into the city of Mesa and spend their dollar here and spend their time riding their bicycles.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
I think I just want to take a moment to compliment you on the work that's been done on this plan. It really has evolved tremendously. I know I probably told you the story before, but back, 1983, 1984, I worked with some of my neighbors in Dobson Ranch asking and working with the city, asking to have bike lanes. And it was, you would have thought we were, you know, asking for the Taj Mahal, and it was there was a lot of pushback, but very quickly the city staff caught on and really became enthusiasts to work it and to see the evolution of where it's come to today. I think this is really an outstanding plan that takes into so many different components for both residents and tourists in the community, and I just wanted to commend you on it.
Thank you. Councilmember Pinter.
Right on time. Two quick observations. That new canal path, bike path that runs along, you know, in District 2, filled with people. I saw 60 winter visitors all in a line going down that with all their safety equipment on.
Wait, were these people or ducks?
No, winter visitors. Yeah, there you go.
Both of them are winter visitors.
They're on the bike. You're right. And just great use, safe. Somebody explained it to me, and I finally get it now, these linear recreation areas. People want a safe place to ride. And the other thing I wanted to thank Mr. Clevinger and his group, whenever we've had a couple of tragedies, bicycle accidents, and I can call over there. They're on top of it. They analyze the information. Is there more safety things that we can do? So I hear a lot from at least District 2 residents that are appreciative of the efforts and the recreation and everything through the bicycle program. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilman Richens?
I guess one thing I chime in on is appreciative of seeing the emphasis on the Safe Routes to Schools program. And my kids live within biking distance of our school, and the schools that they go to, Westwood Carson and Emerson Elementary, are all on a – if you ever go down Westwood Street between 8 and 8:40, there's no way my kids are riding to school. It's just not safe. And so, schools, I'm glad that you use that as a layer of criteria. And, if I was to increase priorities at all there, it would be making sure that there are safe ways for that activity to continue to happen. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Very nicely done. Appreciate all the work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is an action item on the appointments to council, regional, and other boards and committees. I understand there was an issue on one of the things about the possibility of having a Councilman Richens.
What's that?
There's an issue on your committee as it relates to community.
No.
It's not an issue now?
No.
Okay. All right. You've been presented with the recommendations. Any questions? Entertain a motion? Motion from Councilmember Kavanaugh, second from Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Acknowledge receipts of minutes of various boards and committees. A motion from Councilmember Richens, second from Councilmember Finter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. And we'll skip the reports and minutes or meetings.
Just remind Council we have a study session this Thursday, which will be followed by a Community and Cultural Development Committee.
Okay.
Thanks.
There's no other items. We have a motion to adjourn, Councilmember Glover, second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. We'll see you upstairs in a minute.